It's good to get the applause beforehand. Not sure if you'll get it afterwards. First of all, let me introduce my colleague, Tom Nicholas, who's going to present it with me as well. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, good. Word of warning before we start. This is a very technical conference, and I've seen some amazing presentations over the last 2 days, and seen some, you know, pretty innovative, okay, stuff being shown here. This is not that type of presentation. Okay, what we're trying to do in this presentation is help people understand, okay, what the businessman is talking about in today's world, okay, and where the opportunity is, okay, to make money going forward. This is effectively what we're going to break the presentation down into three areas. First of all, what are the CISOs, what are they hearing and seeing today, okay, how are they responding to it, and finally, okay, just an idea that we have for Poland and this part of the world for where there is a real big opportunity to do business, okay, going forward. I hate FUD, okay, and unfortunately, a lot of the ways that we sell security nowadays is using fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But some of it is real, all right? And I think that when you start to hear about the FBI saying that they're seeing, you know, a new cybercrime event every single day, okay, key ones, it's something we have to stand up and take note. And, you know, really what's happening is you know, we've got the identity theft, we've got, okay, web defacement, we've got the spam from zombies, okay. But as a CEO of my own company, and I've worked for, okay, at board level, okay, for a New York Stock Exchange company when I was in the US, okay, this example scares the crap out of me, all right. And for any of you who haven't seen it, okay, let me just take a couple of minutes and explain it. This is a company called Aston Biosciences, all right? Monday morning, okay, they arrive in, and at 9 o'clock, okay, the stock exchange bell goes, and the stock takes off going north, all right? And everybody's wondering what the heck is going on, all right? Because there was no new news that went out. There was nothing that should have been driving the stock up. And then somebody said, well, you've got a notice on your website. Okay, so what happened? Somebody had come into the website, okay, and defaced it. Now, they didn't put up, you know, I love Johnny. Okay, what instead they put up was a notice saying that Aston Biosciences are being purchased, okay, by another company. All right. Now, here's what happens when an announcement like that goes out. Okay, you've got an acquiring company and you've got the acquired company. Okay, but Aston were the company being acquired. The acquiring company, typically when that happens, is that the stock goes down. Okay, the acquiring company, the company being acquired, their stock typically goes up. Why does that happen? Okay, simple. The market assumes that the company that's doing the buying is paying too much for the company that's being bought. All right. So what happened with these guys was that somebody came in, they put a notice on their website, front of their website, saying we're being acquired, all right, with all the details, looked great, and all of a sudden the stock took off because the market assumed, okay, that the stock, that they were going to be paid more to buy the company than the stock was worth right then. So this company asked them, had to come back and do the really embarrassing thing of putting on its own website, okay, do not believe what you've read in our website, okay. That's a CIO, okay, who really had a problem at the end of that day, okay, and probably didn't last the week, okay, with his CEO, okay. So, where is this coming from, okay? Unfortunately, I think that what we're seeing is that the perception is that a lot of this is coming from Eastern Europe, okay. Some of it is a little bit further east, all right. And here's an example of I spent 3 years as managing director for the SANS Institute, and this is what we call the first phase of cybercrime, okay. And we chose these two individuals because they were actually caught, okay, and put in jail. And Tom, you have a pretty good idea of what they did.
Actually, those are not the guys that did the hacking. They found a guy, a poor guy, and how they treated him. They threatened him that if he doesn't do what they want, they will kill his family. Did he have much choice? Not really. Okay. So, he hacked the websites, he did what they wanted. And luckily, they got caught. He, as I remember, he went in full cooperation with the FBI.
Yeah.
He was protected by the FBI, and those are the guys that got busted. And they are in jail right now. Okay.
And Pat Morrissey, who was one of the guys who actually was on this case, turned around, and I loved his quote when he turned around and said, any organized crime that's not using tactics like this should be sued for malpractice.
And that explains everything, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, when we look at this and we turn around and we say, well, hey, you know, that doesn't really bother me, okay? It's cybercrime. It's money that's out there. It's not my money. I'm not being, you know, it's not going to affect me. And I offer that that's not really the case, okay? Because when we start to think about it, cybercrime is one step, okay, away from cyberterrorism, all right? And when we start thinking about cyberterrorism, okay, we start thinking, does anybody here, have they heard of Imam Samudra? Anybody? No? How about if I said the Bali bomber? Okay. The Bali bomber, Imam Samudra, I'm sure I don't have to explain it. It was a bombing in Indonesia about, 3 years ago, Thomas, now? And over 200 people were killed. He was caught and he was put in jail. What they found was that when they went through his records is that the money that had been used to purchase the bombs came from a jewelry store heist, but he had also been involved, okay, in online crime at the stage. Now, money is fungible, okay? So money was coming in through actual physical robbery, but it was also coming in through hacking techniques. Now, he wrote, while he's on death row, he wrote his autobiography, okay? And one of the chapters in the autobiography was called Hacking. So what we did with Insans was we took that chapter, we had it translated, and we sent it down to our leading hacking expert within the organization. And when he came back, it was really interesting what he came back with. What Ed came back with was that it's not so much the hacking techniques that was in the chapter, but rather, okay, the offensive methodology, okay, to teach people how to think like an attacker, okay, that was contained. And then, you know, it comes up with this quote, okay, which effectively, you know.
Well, if you read the quote, guys, it's obvious. If hacking was successful, get ready to gain windfall income for just 3 to 6 hours work. And that's the amount of money that the policeman is getting paid in 6 months. So there's a huge, you know, it's very asymmetric. Look, on one side, you have a guy that uses the malicious techniques and gets paid as much as the guy that is trying to fight him for 6 months. That's total asymmetry, and that's the way, that's why it's also such successful. It's easy way.
Yeah. But, you know, this is the old world. I mean, for the last several years, 5 or 6 years, what we've been dealing with is a lot has been operating systems and networks, okay? The attack vector, about 12 or 18 months ago, the attack vector started to change, okay? And it started to change, and what we started to see was a lot more attacks on applications. This is nothing new, but if we go back about 6-7 years ago?
Well, 6-7 years ago, the landscape was a bit different. First of all, the applications have been there for years, you know, good 20 years at least. But those applications were, you know, what's the major change right now between 6-7 years ago and what we have right now? At the moment, everything is actually, you know, online. So it's, you know, it's reachable from any part of the world, wherever you are. You can reach the website, and it's reachable, it's public, it's on the web, accessible for the people. That's the main difference right now.
Okay. Key reason is that it's still about money, but now it's about data, because data is value. Okay. Once you own the data, you own the identity, okay, you own access, okay, and people are going after it. Also, we're talking about, you know, 1,000x multiple of applications that can be hacked nowadays versus what was available, okay, 6-7 years ago. And the result is that the number of vulnerabilities has gone through the roof. Just to give you an idea, this is an organization called WebSec, a web AppSec. They're based in Brussels, and they did a survey about 2 years ago of a bunch of websites, over 30,000 of them. And what you know, when I saw this slide, and we have a number of these surveys, okay, but I was absolutely blown away by two key statistics, okay. Cross-site scripting, okay, and SQL injection are not new attack techniques, okay. They're not new problems, okay. And yet, if we look at the number of people, the number of sites that were infected, okay, with them, okay, it was phenomenal. 86% of them, okay, had cross-site scripting errors. All right,
of those 31,000 audited websites.
Yeah.
Only from that set.
Yeah. Okay. And actually, well, okay, we're trying to figure out how to pass off the presentation, yeah, as well. So forgive us if we're a little bit slow at the moment, but. If we really, when I started looking at this, I started to think, okay, is that we have a serious problem with how we write code for these sites, okay? One of the things that we have to start thinking about is, okay, what do we understand by code quality?
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, you've done more of this than I have.
The quality, as you know, the quality is everywhere, actually, also in the code. So what we understand, you know, quite literally about the code quality is the code that's written properly, you can compile it, it doesn't throw any errors, it works, you can start running it. Does the job? Well, okay, let's assume it does the job. Doesn't have unnecessary blobs. I mean, you know, funny comments, they are funny. Okay, we can leave them. But, you know, uninitialized variables that are used or declared but not used. What actually Petko said today during his presentation about the object-oriented programming at the end, you know, those leftovers can be left in anything that gets, you know, released later on to people that have no idea about it. Undocumented functions, actually. Some call them bugs, some call them features. You know, code that is easy to maintain, that's a good quality code. We all know the best practices, you know, like auditing your code, checking the code. Has anyone heard, or maybe otherwise, who heard the acronym PDCA? That's one of the techniques. John?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, quickly, PDCA is a... It's called the Deming cycle. It's entirely offline technique. It's nothing new, actually. That was designed after the Second World War. Deming actually popularized that. Japanese economy, the industry, was ruined after the Second World War. So, but look, where they are now? They are the leading force on many markets.
Yeah.
But how they get there? They employed PDCA cycle. P stands for plan. You plan what you want to get, what are the requirements, you specify what you need. Do, implement it. That's simple. C stands for check. Check if what you got after the implementation is matching what you've planned to get. Because sometimes, you know, you write the specification, then you make the product, code is a product as well, and then it seems that, hey, that product isn't necessarily what I wanted to get, right? And then A stands for act, PDCA, plan, do, check, act. Act after you check the code, you know, make improvements, fill the gaps, what doesn't match the initial specification. Actually, that means going through the PDCA process once again. So unless you get really what was in the specification.
But Thomas, that's exactly how most people write code. That's how you do
exactly.
It. That's how
exactly.
You, how you do most projects.
But exactly. But
there's
one aspect.
What about security?
Security was forgotten. It was, you know... But you've seen the presentation yesterday by Alberto on SQL injection, I believe. If someone missed, that's a crash course of SQL injections in the easiest way. Excuse me. Could that be avoided? We believe yes, it could be avoided, at least partially. Dirty hacks that work turned into production systems, they last forever. That's basically the legacy that is left forever. We all see the problems, we understand them, we are here. So it means we came here to talk about the problems we face. And we know the answers, what are the solutions, right? But do we learn from our mistakes? If you go back to the slide where there were the statistics, you know, I don't think personally we learn from our mistakes, not only ours, but in general, from those mistakes.
Actually, a big reason that we, within the SANS Institute over the and I'm no longer a member of the organization, but while I was there, we did a lot of research over the last couple of years in this area. And we're trying to understand why there were so many vulnerabilities out there right now. And a big part of it, of the reason we, that we've come up with is that over the years, people have been taught how to write great code. They've been taught how to write effective code. They've been taught how to light code, okay, code that works, okay, and that can be implemented quickly and easily. Okay.
But sorry, John, okay, to interrupt, but please raise your hands. Have you had a secure coding classes at university or any kind of a school you attended? Because, you know, okay, I see some hands. Okay, that's good.
Do me a favor. Can you come up to me afterwards? Because I really do want to find out, okay, what university that was, okay? Oh, was your company? Okay. But did anybody here, do most people here, when they started learning how to do programming, did you do the university? Was it? Yeah? Did anybody, I always ask this question because it's a really, really important part of the thing. Sorry, I'm just stepping out of the light. Is that, did anybody take any secure coding class when they were in university? Or anything to do about writing code securely? Or about cross-site scripting, about SQL injection? Anybody?
There is one hand, two.
Oh, one, two?
Three.
Okay, three.
Four, great.
Do me a favor, please come up
more,
to me afterwards.
More hands.
Because I have a reason I'll tell you afterwards why I'd like to find out about those universities, okay? But what we have found is that actually is what we see here, okay, is that practically nobody has. So what's the problem that we're seeing then, okay? The problem is that we've got great code writers, okay? But they're learning security, okay, as they go through, okay, their career, all right? So what you have is that you've got all the people who are writing code right now. A number of them know how to write it securely. Many of them don't. Okay, but a huge problem that's following on is that you've got a university group, okay, that are coming out of university, and they're the same way. They're coming out. They've got no skills. Okay?
John, have you tried to speak to the programmer and tell him that, explain the situation? Have you tried that? Because I tried. You know, it's not easy.
At the university, no. It is actually. I mean, I can talk about a couple of the universities right now that are doing stuff about it, and we can talk about it later. But, you know, what we've identified here is that, you know, all of the security issues that we've come across so far are the result of, okay, poorly written code, and that's what you've spent years trying to fix and correct. Okay, and you've also gone in, you've tried, you know, whether you're a pen tester or whether you're on the defensive side, okay, trying to protect it. You know, the result of the reason for most of the problems has been poorly written code. Okay, so what we've gone out and, or what SANS and a whole bunch of companies in industry have gone out and said is that, look, we need to try and fix this problem. All right. And so what they did was that they formed an organization called the SANS Secure Software Institute. All right. And what the Secure Software Institute was the objective it was to do was to try and fix some of these problems at source. So instead of trying to fix them after, you know, it's been implemented, instead let's take it way okay earlier, okay, and the way to do it by taking it way earlier is that you start to teach people, okay, how to write more effectively, okay. So the result is now is that what we're starting to see with some of this work is that CISOs are changing, okay. Some of the questions that they've been asking. What they're now starting to ask is, to be honest, the one that I think is really important is this one down here. Okay? How do we ensure that any programmer working for us, okay, has the skills and knowledge to write secure code?
Basically, okay. There's another problem with that. You know, you see India, China, are they good enough? Well, maybe. How do you know? Do you see those people working? Are they working with you? You know.
Keep in mind, actually, that's a good point, Tom, because The key word there is outsourcers, okay? And we're going to talk about that later, okay, and where an opportunity is for this part of the world, okay? The bottom line is that there is a solution, okay? Dennis was up here earlier, and he talked about Jeff, and I think Jeff actually had it spot on, okay? Is that people don't wake up saying, hey, I'm going to create a SQL injection, okay? Or I'm going to, you know, to create a cross-site scripting error, okay, in the code, okay? They do it because they don't know, okay, for the most time. Or they're under so much pressure, okay, commercial pressure, that they can't can't do it, okay? So what we did before I put that up, let me just, I'm just going to take 1 minute and just tell you what the history was, okay? A number of organizations came to SANS, all right, and they said, hey, you've been helping us for all these years, okay, to build, okay, and the skills of our sysadmins, okay, of our network engineers, okay, and so on, okay. We started to realize that all we're doing is that we're just doing the same thing over and over and over and over again, okay. So how can we stop it? We've got to kind of move it back further, as I said earlier, and start talking about, you know, about teaching people how to write more secure code. All right. So, you know, they came to us, and to be honest, I was with the organization when this started to happen, and you know, it was a scary moment for us, because it is such a huge problem. Think about it. Okay, how many sysadmins, okay, and network engineers are there, compared to how many programmers there are? It's at least a 10x multiple number of programmers in the world than there are sysadmins and network engineers. All right. So now you're talking about, okay, changing the world, literally changing the world. All right. So, because you know we SANS has built itself to be a community driven, okay, and with a responsibility to the community, we said, look, let's try and figure out what it is that we should be doing. So what we did was, we realized that there are three steps, okay? The first step was to help people understand that they had a problem, okay? Okay, it's like being an alcoholic, okay? You can talk to an alcoholic, okay, and you can talk to him, but until he starts to realize he's got a problem, you're just talking to him. Well, guess what? A programmer, it's the same thing, okay? You can talk to him, is anybody here tried to talk to a programmer about security? I have, okay? What has he told you? I know what he's told, because yeah. Tom and I talked about it earlier. As Tom said, you know what he said?
He pointed to me, look, that's
your job.
You secure it, or take the networking guy and you secure it. You know, I'm paid to write the code that will do the job, but, you know, security is not my job, it's yours. You're responsible for security.
Exactly. Spot on. Give that man a prize. But seriously, that's exactly what it is, all right? So the first step is that you have to help people understand they have a problem. The second step is, once they've identified they have a problem, okay, you've got to help them fix the problem. And the third step is that, okay, those who have fixed the problem, you've got to help them get recognized that, hey, I'm sorted, all right? So the goal was to create an assessment, okay? Then there would be a whole bunch of organizations out there. This is not a one organization chore. There is no way that a little company like SANS based in the US, no matter how big it gets, can solve this problem. It's a problem for everybody. And lots of organizations worldwide have got to get involved in the project. But the second step is that you then have to teach them. And the final step is that you've got to create a certification that allows them to demonstrate, I've solved the problem. Well, that's exactly what we tried to do, all right? But what happened was that one of the biggest customers for this was the US military. And they turned around and said, look, in order to make this fly within our organization, you've got to create the certification at the beginning. Because if people are going to take an assessment, they've got to be able to show that, hey, I passed the assessment, therefore I'm okay. But if they don't pass the assessment, hey, I got a problem. Well, so it turned out that actually that we had to take step one and step three and put it into step one. And then those who so the objective was that you took the assessment. If you passed it with a high score, okay, it still identified you had some areas to work on, you could work on, and if you didn't pass it, it said, I have a problem, go fix it, all right? So, oh yeah, sorry, it's in this pocket. So, really, the assessment was set up to do two things, okay? It has two questions. What tasks must programmers do to write secure applications, okay? And what knowledge and skills do they have to do that? All right. So what we did was the assessment. It has been created, okay, and it's been done for. The goal is to do it for six languages, okay. So, C, Java, C++, Perl, PHP, and .NET. All right. So, what does this exam do? Well, let me tell you what you can't do. First of all, you can't read a book and pass this exam. Okay, because it's designed to test your ability, okay, to write and recognize secure code. So what does it look like? I have a prize if somebody can answer that one for me. Any C programmers in the group?
One tip: pick the best answer that matches the most.
Can you stand up and tell us? Thomas?
Okay, wouldn't it be the string null termination error? Which answer?
He said C.
C. Okay. We have the answer.
Okay. Who was it?
Colleague in white shirt.
Okay, you know what? You were the man who stood up and was willing to take the, to answer the question. Okay,
Thank you for that.
Example. Look, typically the exams are made up of they're based for a language. Okay, first of all. Okay, I'm just going to go forward here. The first two are already in place. They're for C and for Java. Okay, there's four more that are coming. They'll be done by the end of this year. Okay. They are typically 100 questions. Okay, the questions are weighted, okay, such that if the area where you've got the biggest problems, okay, carry the most questions, and so on. You cannot if you have a major weakness in one particular area, it'll show up in this exam. Okay,
John, to point out that at the end of the exam, you get something like a scoring sheet where you get the areas of problems, and you get a score like. From 1 to 5 stars, where are you? If that's the area I've mastered, or I'm quite short, I fall short on something, and that's the way you should, catch up on this one.
And by the way, it's not people like me that are writing this exam. Okay, here are some of the people. I mean, Randy Marchini is one of the leading guys in the U.S. in Virginia Tech. You've got, Mark Schoenfeld here, who's the leading Java guy. Okay,
Johannes Ulrich.
Johannes Ulrich is the creator of the D-Shield. Okay, and the director of the Internet Storm Center. Okay, these are the people who are involved. Okay, in creating and vetting the questions. This is not an organization like SANS saying here's an exam for you. All right, it's the community coming together. Okay, creating a consensus exam. Okay, that everybody can use. Now, so I'm just going to take just a couple of minutes and talk about this.
Okay.
So the exam was launched. It was launched in August of last year. Okay, I ran it in London in December. It was ran in Belgium in February. Okay, and it's been rolled out. Okay, there is no problem in running this exam anywhere. Okay, and it's not a case of a cost. There's an email at the end that you can write to spa@sans.org. If your organization, I think they're charging like $500 to take the exam at the moment, but you can write to them and they provide scholarships for the exam as well. So it's there. But here is this is the important one, actually, in that everybody looks up here and they say the top one, okay, they identified, you know, the gaps in our programmers' skills, and I think it's important, okay, but I would actually take you down to the bottom one right here, okay, because these are not, okay, comments. This is a survey from the organizations themselves, okay, that are using. Why is the bottom one so important? Let me tell you why. Okay, because these are 40% of these 400 organizations are thinking, okay, this is a way for us to create a competitive advantage, okay, in the marketplace. Okay, we can go out, okay, to our customers and say is that everybody who's working for us in this organization, everybody who's writing code for us, all the product that we put out there, okay, has been written by secure coders. Okay, that is what's going to drive this whole program. Okay, this is important.
Okay? This is the way how you get there.
But
from top to the bottom.
This is the important one. So the reason that I wanted to come here and talk about this, okay, with Tom was that I wanted to tell you is that know up front that it's going to happen. It's not a case of, you know, that it's a fad and it's going to go away. It's not, okay, because when organizations create, okay, a marketing strategy around, okay, something like this, okay, it's for real. Okay. This top one up here, okay, this is where organizations are starting to realize is that it's not just a problem for all of us sitting here, okay, can we write code, but we got to move it back into the universities. This is a real company. It's one of the top five, you know, software organizations, world begins with O, okay, I'll leave you figure out the rest, but they came out 2 months ago, okay, and they wrote to the 10 universities that they hire from, and they said, okay, teach them how to write secure or we're not going to hire from you. Okay, let me tell you this much, those universities have woken up. That's why I'm interested in talking about those universities that where they're already teaching secure skills. I'd let you know, come and talk to me. We want to recognize them, we want to work with them within SANS, we want to help them. Okay, other universities that you've gone to, all right, that you feel and that you still have an allegiance to, and you think that you can help, or that they need help to do this, and they're willing to become involved in an academic program with SANS, please come and tell me as well. It's really important. But you know, there's one other thing. What we've, you know, as you try and figure out, okay, what it is that we should be doing here, okay, and how to write more secure code. There is a lot of help out there, okay? One of the things that we did within SANS was that we tried to figure out, again, not SANS, you know, driven by the community, working with a whole bunch of people who were really smart, okay, a lot smarter than I am, and said, okay, is there a way that we can provide a map to help people, okay, identify where some of the errors are? Well, yeah, there is now, okay? This is a wall map that we create, we give out, we do it a couple of times a year, and this year what the first one we've done is that we focus exclusively on common, okay, security errors in programming. And so what it does is that you now have a wall map you can put up on your wall, and you can say is that, okay, as I'm thinking about quality in the code that I'm writing, okay,
think about security
here,
as well.
Here is a roadmap for me, all right? There's a couple of hundred of them sitting outside. Take them, okay? We give them out to the community. They're for anybody who wants them. But please do use them, okay? I think they're useful. If you remember back, we talked about this one right here? We said that 38%, okay? And, you know, people ask me, says, but are these real companies? Okay, well,
who's driving
this? They are. Here's some of the things they want to do as well. Some of them. Okay. They want to create customized exams for themselves. Okay. For their own libraries. All right. It's going, as I said, it's happening. Okay. You've got, you know, the great thing about this group here is that, and what we're trying to do is that we're trying to help, okay, you know, an industry here get a jump step on the others. Why is it important? Why? Well, again, what I look at is somebody like this guy right here. Okay, when SSI was launched, and it was launched in March of last year, it's about 14 months ago. Okay, this gentleman here flew from India to Washington, okay, just to attend the launch. Okay, because do you know who Tata is? Okay, you do. Okay, great. Well, just for those who don't, Tata is one of the big software engineering houses in India. So you got Tata, Infosys, Peugeot, IBM, and so on. Okay, but what they've started to realize is that, hey, you know what? We can use this, okay, as a competitive advantage too. So organizations, okay, these previous organizations are going to use it to the marketplace for their customers. These guys are saying, hey, you know what? We're competing against these other guys, okay, to supply code and programmers, okay, to industry. Okay, we want to be able to say that our people are secure.
Okay? And that means the strong point here is that the race has already started. So if you want to take part in the race, well, you should probably get up and
absolutely
start doing something about it, because those guys, they are good. They're really good. They know what they are doing, and they know how to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So that's that easy.
So I wanted to go back to, you know, let's go back and let's talk about it. At the beginning of the presentation, I said there's a couple of opportunities here, okay, for this, for Poland, okay, and this part of Europe. The first one is that most people, there's a lot of penetration testers, okay, at this conference, okay, and most of it over the years has been for network, okay, and systems penetration, okay. We can now almost say without any doubt that one of the most secure jobs for the next 5 to 10 years is going to be application pen testing.
It's a really safe bet on this one.
Yeah, it is. But there's one key thing, okay, and this is what we encourage people is that application pen testing is very different from network pen testing. Okay, and the great application pen testers are the ones who know, okay, how to write code and write code well. All right, so you've got to learn how to write code. Okay, you've got to learn how to write secure code so that you can then go in, okay, and become great application testers. So that's from the services side. All right, I'm much more interested actually in the other side. Okay, in the previous slide here we have this presentation. Okay, we have this quote here from Tata. Okay, in India, all right, and you know when Tom and I started talking about coming here, you know, my first question was, I said, why the heck isn't Poland, okay, one of the software development, okay, centers, okay, in Europe? Why isn't it a great city? I mean, here's what you have: you've got very highly technical people, okay. You're right adjacent to some of the biggest markets, so you're an hour and a half. It took me an hour and 40 minutes to fly from London. Okay, to come here. It takes me 9 hours to go to India and I got to get a whole bunch of jabs before I get there. Let me tell you this much, it's not a fun experience. Okay? It's a lower cost, okay, development environment than the UK or Germany or France or the US. Okay? Okay, why can't Poland, okay, become, okay, one of the software development capitals, okay, of the world? Okay? And if you want to find out how you can create a competitive advantage here, there are people sitting in this audience who should be thinking about how can I create a company to write and provide secure code, okay, for companies like we mentioned earlier. Okay. But the key is, okay, and this is the key, you've got to create a competitive advantage. And the competitive advantage is going to be how can we guarantee, okay, that we can write and produce secure code. Not just code, secure code. Okay, and that was my promise. That was the thing I wanted to leave at the end of the presentation, because that's where I believe the opportunity is. Okay, if I was a businessman and I was living here and I'd grown up here, okay, let me tell you this much: this is where I would be jumping into. All right.
With the differences, well, the low cost—it's not in a negative way. India creates a code at low cost, as John said, lower cost than in the UK, for example. That's why we have outsourcing. High quality of development, we have that. Europe versus India, well, the location. And learn English, We are there.
Yeah.
We have everything except yet secure code. We know how to do it.
If you have any questions on this, what I would encourage you to do is that, you can come to me and I'll give you a business card and I'll help as well. But the secure spa@sans.org will get an automatic answer as well, okay, for anybody. I would also say is that please take some of these, okay? Please think about, okay, the secure exam itself. If you go, it's SANS, you can either go to the SANS.org website and over on the extreme right-hand side, and thing you'll see a little click where it says secure software. You can go and you can get all the information there. I encourage you, please think about this opportunity here. I think that this is a part of the world that can become a leader, okay, in this space. I look forward to coming back in 10 years' time and seeing a great industry here. Thank you very much.
And I think, just to add one word, I think those maps will be your friends from now on. Because whenever I write a piece of code, we all can know everything about, you know, how to mitigate the problems in security of the code. But honestly, we are just human beings. We make mistakes. So, you know, someone put a lot of effort, the whole community put a lot of effort into creating that map that you have actually one sheet of paper where you have all that information in a nice, visible way as a tree, easy to read, so you can double check before you release any piece of the code. It will be really helpful for you. Thank you.